You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I'm joined by Adam Jones and Conor O'Neill as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park, of course. The morning after, we reflect on deadline day and the summer transfer window. We obviously ask the biggest question, if Everton's squad is stronger than it was when it entered the window. We assess the ins, the outs, the players Everton didn't manage to sign, the players Everton did not manage to move on, of course, and there are plenty of players on all of those lists for us to get stuck into. So, Adam, let's just start with that big question then, because that's the question for every transfer window. Is the squad that emerges from the window, now we're into September, stronger than the squad that went into the window in June and July?
It's a really interesting question, isn't it? Because I think on the face of things, you would have to potentially say yeah, because I don't think Everton have really lost any major players over the course of the last few months. And the players that Everton have brought in have certainly added something as well. Like if we're taking, for example, Bernard leaving the club, Everton have managed to offset that with the arrivals of Damari Gray and Andros Townsend. And I think that in itself provides a lot more balance across the squad. We've got two wingers there who are going to, I think, well, no offence to Bernard, but I think they're going to contribute a lot more than Bernard would have done over the course of the coming season. So I think there's an improvement there. I think the arrival of Begovic is kind of offset by Robin Olsen not coming in on loan. I think they're, as I've said before on the podcast, I think they're pretty similar levels. And you know, to get someone like Asmir Begovic in on a free with so much Premier League experience behind them, I think that's another good bit of business. And then right at the end of deadline day, Rondon's arrival. Again, you can see exactly why Everton have brought someone like Rondon to the club to, you know, provide backup and to challenge Dominic Calvert-Lewin as much as he can. So if you're offsetting that with the departure of Josh King, for example, is Rondon going to offer more than Josh King did? Well, you'd certainly hope so, because Josh King didn't really get the chance to offer a lot. So on the face of things, I would say that the squad probably does look a bit stronger, but obviously you've got to offset that with the fact that it's not as strong as it should be. I think we'll probably get into it a little bit later on, but Everton really should have moved in certain areas of the pitch to strengthen the squad, and they've failed to do that essentially. So, you know, there's a certain air of disappointment, and I can understand that air of disappointment, but on the face of things, I think the squad is maybe just slightly more balanced, I would say.
Con, same question to you, mate. Is the squad stronger on September the 1st than it was on July the 1st?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to disagree with what Adam said there. I think on the face of it is stronger. I think we've certainly improved in areas where it needs improving in terms of, you know, certainly up wide in terms of Gray, Townsend, and the kind of inclusion they've kind of given for Moby, the kick up the backside that he probably needed. Because it's clear to you that he's been a different player so far this season since them two lads have come in. So, yeah, no, I think only time will tell really to see if it is strong enough. I think ultimately it's on paper as things stand now, it looks good. But it's one of them, isn't it? Whatever, you're kind of thinking if they get one or two injuries or, you know, a COVID outbreak and lads have to go into isolation like we've seen already this season, then it could be very thin on the ground. I mean, you look at the bench for Brighton on Saturday, at the weekend. There's two goalkeepers and one player on that who's no longer at the club anymore. So it's still incredibly thin. But I think that the good thing for Everton is that they addressed the areas that they needed addressing. I think the two lads up wide were massive. And I think the signing of Rondon is massive. I know it's quite underwhelming, not the kind of the mega forward that people hope and probably some expected us to bring in. But I think he'll add some much needed backup. And I think the way he plays and the way he kind of goes about his business is very similar to the way Calvert-Lewin started the season in terms of becoming a kind of a centre-forward in the box and getting on the end of crosses, and that's exactly what Rondon will do. So I think what Adam said there about, you know, he'll have more impact than Josh King. I think he will, and I think we'll see more of him than we will see Josh King, because I think it's quite clear that Benitez is a big fan of his, and I'll have no hesitation in putting him in. I think with Carlo and Josh King last season, the kind of almost seemed a reluctance from Carlo to put Josh King in. It was almost as if he didn't rate him. It was as if like, oh, well, only when it really, really gets tough or I literally run out of no options that I will consider putting him on. You know, you think of some of the games where even with Denano forward, he still couldn't get a look in. So if you look at it on now, that certainly won't be the case with Rondon, and he'll be given opportunities, and he could be a really big asset off the bench as well, which is something that Everton didn't have last year. They didn't have no assets off the bench. You could potentially come on and change the game. Whereas, you know, you look now, they've got three wingers. So that's one winger you imagine is going to be on the bench. So that's one who can come off the bench and potentially have an impact, and a backup centre forward who can come off the bench and have an impact. So in terms of the squad, it is stronger than what it was, say, on July the 1st. But I think only time will tell if it's going to be strong enough to maybe give Everton a campaign that the fans will want to see and will want to hope that they can produce.
And of course, speaking of wingers, a show of faith from Rafa Benitez in wanting to keep Anthony Gordon around. Hopefully he's going to get some game time. But okay then, Adam, you mentioned it first. The squad on the whole appears stronger. You both seem in mostly in agreement that it looks stronger. Obviously time will tell. But as you've both said, it is thin in certain areas. Give me sort of your kind of analysis of the areas where you think it's thin and your areas of concern that weren't addressed in this window.
It's right back, isn't it? I think right back is, yeah, it's something that we've been talking about throughout the summer. I think if you go back to probably our podcast.
Well, yeah, exactly. Summer 20, summer 19, summer 18.
If you go back over our podcast over probably the last few years, then you're there us talking about this long-term success of the Seamus Coleman, which, you know, Everton fans have kind of been promised for a good long while now, and it just never seems to materialise. This year we had, right at the start of the window, it was Max Ahrens who was getting linked a lot, and then, you know, obviously we had that whole summer sort of saga almost with Denzel Dumfries, even though, you know, nothing seemed to materialise there either. And then the late move for Ainsley Maitland-Niles, again, you know, we had maybe a little 24 hours of excitement or something like that there, and then that was very much off the table as well. And it's just, you really can't hide away from how disappointing that is, to be honest, because over the last few seasons, you know, we were talking about this yesterday, Phil, Seamus Coleman, while he's obviously such a great servant for Everton, and when he's on his game, as we saw against Brighton, he's still a fantastic fullback, but he does suffer with injuries, as we've seen over the last few seasons. I'm not sure when the last time he made 30 appearances in a season was, and now we're essentially saying to him, right, you're going to have to start pretty much every Premier League game, maybe some cup games as well, depending on who we're going to draw in cup games further down the line. And it's just so much pressure to be placing on somebody who, you know, for the last few years we've essentially been looking to replace in a similar way that we replaced Leighton Baines on the other side with Luca Dean. You know, Baines was still obviously a very quality player when Luca Dean came in, but Dean was the natural successor, and he's took that position on, and he's, you know, been fantastic there. We wanted to see something like that happening on the right flank as well, and it just doesn't seem to be the case. You know, John Joe Kenny is there as backup now, but, you know, after a pretty uninspiring loan at Celtic last season, is he going to be the man who's really going to be pushing and challenging Seamus Coleman? Going by the evidence that we've seen for the last few years at Everton, you'd have to say no to that. So Everton are looking, you know, until at least January, of having Seamus Coleman as the right back again, which, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm slighting Seamus Coleman in any way, because I think he is obviously a fantastic fullback, but it's not the situation that Everton fans wanted to find themselves in, was it? You know, right back was an absolute must. I thought at the start of this summer, it was like almost unthinkable that Everton would have gone into the coming season without another right back on board, even somebody in the short term who could, you know, push and challenge Seamus for the coming campaign. If we were going to maybe postpone finding his long term successor for the future, we haven't even managed to get that over the line in the end, which I think is another hammer blow, to be honest. And, you know, I've got no doubt in my mind that Rafa Benitez probably isn't happy with that situation either. He's going to have to work with what he's got at the minute. You know, Seamus Coleman, John Joe Kenny, perhaps somebody like Ben Godfrey or Mason Holgate coming over and covering there in, you know, and any sort of dire circumstance. But, you know, as we talked about again yesterday, Phil, we don't want to really drag centre-backs out of position if we can possibly help it. So, yeah, I think right-back is the major one for me, even though, you know, the situation on the other flank probably isn't great either after letting Niels and Nkunku go on loan. So it's just it is a disappointment. And I think, you know, maybe there's people in the Everton hierarchy that need to face a few tough questions after this summer transfer window because of that.
Well, Connor, Adam neatly segued onto the other side of the defence. Luca Dean clearly established his first choice. He was, you know, ultimately identified as Leighton Baines' long-term successor. That change happened quickly. But now behind him, for this season at least, there is a bit of a gap, to put it politely. You know, Ben Godfrey deputised there last season, but of course his best position is centre-half. And, you know, we're aware of the difficulties the under-23s currently have at left-back. They're currently playing Joe Anderson when fit and available at left-back. He's a centre-half. And the club had even looked to try and find a younger player to come in and play at left-back for the 23s, such as is the gap they've got. So is right-back a bigger problem than left-back, or left-back a bigger problem than right-back potentially for Everton going forward?
I think right-back is a bigger issue than left-back at the moment, simply because we're basically hoping and banking on Luca Dean playing a large amount of games, or pretty much playing every Premier League game and continuing at the levels he has done and the way we've seen it in recent years. So I think because of how good Dean's been and how consistent he's been and, you know, his availability, etc., we're basically banking on that kind of coming again. And it's right-back, that's the big issue. But no, I think what Adam said there about, you know, questions of the Everton hierarchy, I think this is the first real kind of, you know, black mark against Marcel Brands's name in terms of the two full-back areas, because allowing Naz and Kuku to leave is all well and good on paper. He's going to get game time, etc. But if it does leave gaping holes in the squad, and let's face it, you know, Everton are now back at a situation where if it could end up being rounds, you know, square pegs in round holes again, which you just think, you know, 4 years on from when you were doing that under Ronald Koeman, Marco Silva, we're still doing it. It's kind of like there's no lessons ever been learned. And it's just, oh, well, we've done it before, so we'll do it again. Well, no, let's change it and let's never have to do that again. You know, it's not, let's break with tradition and you know, start afresh and be more productive. So I think that's the big issue for me, is that, you know, Marcel Brands is, since he's come in, his kind of remit for me is always going to find a right back who can come in and take over and be at the club for a long time. And yet, you know, here we are, you know, 4 years on, we're still talking about potential right backs who could come in and offer something moving forward. And I think that the issue at left back is that the worry for me is that the backup is probably now Fabian Delph, which again, you know, that's another thing in terms of, and it's probably similar issue with Jonjo Kenny on the right side, is that they're players who probably would have left the club if an offer came in for them. They're probably players who Rafa probably would have looked at and thought, well, I can do without them. If an offer comes in, you know, we'll get rid of them. So we're now having to put faith in players who probably have spent large parts of them thinking, well, my future might not be here. I might not be sticking around. Once January comes, I could be gone again anyway if an offer comes in, because the club won't be off the book. So we're now putting our faith in players who we probably made clear that they haven't really got much of a future, who now possibly, you know, 6-7 games into a season, we could be going to them with, you know, a begging bowl, saying, like, you have to go in there now and do a job. And, you know, you hope that the professional and stuff, but stuff like that always lingers in people's minds, doesn't it? And I think, you know, ultimately, we've seen in the past where Everton have paid the price for that because they've had to fall back on players who've been told they've got no future at the club. And then when it hasn't worked out, we should not really be surprised it hasn't worked out, because it was destined not to work out. So I think for me, right back's more of an issue than left back at the minute. But that's only because we're banking on Luca Dean playing pretty much every game we possibly can, and getting as much out of him as we possibly can, which is probably not fair on him, and is, again, probably more of a black mark against our director of football in terms of he's not moved the way we thought he would have. And the fact that, for me, the fact that we're out of right back 4 years on is just astonishing, really, because there's surely got to be someone out there. You know, we all know the work and the in-depth they go into in the games and the stats and what have you. There's surely got to be someone out there who fits what they're looking for. And for me, it's a shambles, really, that we've ended the summer without another right back, because it does leave a gaping hole in the squad. And again, it raises more questions than answers around Marcel Brands' role at the club and what he's actually bringing to the table.
Definitely an area of concern, Conor. And I mean, obviously, I think that and there's got to be an element of circumstance, perhaps, as works against Brands in the fact that the manager has changed quite a lot. And obviously, new managers come in, don't they, with different ideas of right backs. COVID has obviously created a difficulty in the market. But I think you're right. And I think most people listening to this would agree that from 18, what, summer 18 now to the summer of 2021, and still we're talking about finding a right back and still not being able to have done it. That is a difficult one and doesn't reflect particularly well, does it? So a priority position remains a problem position. But just before we move on to the players that the football club managed to move on this summer, a lot of money, despite this being a market and still clubs suffering with losses from the pandemic, a lot of money was spent. Chelsea spent a lot of money. City spending 100 million on one player. I think Arsenal were the biggest spenders, if I'm right. Correct me if I'm wrong. United obviously spending quite a lot of money as well. But, you know, for what we've done, signing, six players and spending less than £2 million, I think, you know, most observers would say Everton have probably ended up getting or appear to be going to get most bang for their buck.
Mm. It's mad, isn't it? The clubs that you've mentioned, they're big spenders. They were all skint a few months ago when they were trying to make the Super League, weren't they? So, I wonder where all that money's come from. Going back to Everton, I think Everton, were they the least spenders in the Premier League? Did we spend the least in the Premier League this year?
I would guess so. I haven't checked, but we would imagine that would be right.
I think I did see something like that on Twitter a little bit earlier. And, you know, you wouldn't really have imagined that, would you, coming into this summer after, you know, the experience that we've had over the last few summers of previous managers coming in, you know, Ronald Koeman, Sam Allardyce spending 40 million on two players, which was hilarious because he was only there for a few months.
But of course, one of the reasons we've had to spend so little is because of what you just said.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I think it's something that we again mentioned last night, wasn't it? That there was an impending sense that this kind of transfer window was creeping up. It was a looming specter that just had to happen at some point. And, you know, unfortunately for Rafa Benitez, it's kind of fell on his shoulders to do it. But, you know, as you say, in terms of getting bang for your buck, I don't think there's much more Everton could have done with the players that they did bring in. Getting in Andros Townsend on a free, you know, it might have seemed underwhelming at the time. It still might seem underwhelming to a few fans, but if you've seen his performances so far in an Everton shirt, I think you can understand exactly why he was brought into the club. He's got a fantastic cross into the box. I think his defensive work from the front on that flank as well is exemplary. And, you know, it's very clear that he's going to put in 100% every time he pulls on an Everton shirt, which, you know, I've said in the past, that shouldn't really be an asset that you pick up on, because everybody should do that. But so many times over the last few years, Everton had players that haven't done that. So I think it's worth pointing out when Everton do get a player who does do that. I think Demarai Gray is very similar. And obviously he's somebody who's a little bit younger than Townsend, but has something really that he wants to prove. Getting him in for, 1.7 million, something like that. You know, that already is looking like a hell of a bargain considering the performances that he's put in so far. So you've just got to hope that, you know, what Rafa Benitez's message that he's trying to get across to Gray is consistency. So we've got to hope that, you know, Gray can find that consistency and can keep this up throughout the course of the season. And then, you know, Begovic, really, really solid cover for Jordan Pickford. We're not expecting Jordan Pickford to be out of many games, but, you know, if that does come about, then Asmir Begovic is easily good enough cover to step in for that. And Solomon Rondon as well up front, you know, a really, really solid cover. You know, Premier League experience at both West Brom and Newcastle. I've seen loads of Newcastle fans tweeting yesterday how gutted they were that Everton had signed Rondon, because they think he's going to be a really good player. And I mean, only time will tell how much game time he actually gets and, you know, how much he'll be able to prove up front. But, you know, for only spending, as we say, little over 1.7 million, if that, to bring in a number of quality, experienced players in the Premier League as well. These are people that Rafa Benitez knows he can depend on, which I think is a really important aspect for the coming season. He wasn't maybe able to get in the players who would massively improve the quality in a lot of areas of the pitch. He wasn't able to, you know, balance out the fullback positions as we've mentioned. He maybe wasn't able to get in the midfielder that he might have liked either. But he has brought in a lot of players that he can trust in a lot of positions and a lot of different situations, which I think when you're a new manager coming to a new club, something like that could be invaluable for you over the course of the first few months. So Rafa Benitez won't be massively happy with the transfer business, I don't think, but I think he'll be very content with those players that he's brought in. And, you know, for the price that we've got them in as well, at least even if they fail, which I don't think many of them will, to be honest, I don't think they'll underwhelm. But even if they do underwhelm, at least they're not expensive mistakes, are they? Like, that's a very different prospect than we've had over the course of the last few years. You know, we've been spending, you know, 10, 15 million pounds on players, and then, well, lo and behold, they haven't really ripped up trees and they've certainly underwhelmed. In this case, at least they're not expensive mistakes. So that's some semblance of positivity, I suppose, that we've maybe learned from our mistake in that sort of sense. But yeah, it is just a shame that Rafa Benitez has had to deal with this transfer window that was always going to be coming on the horizon. But I think he has, in the circumstances, managed it quite well.
Connor, come on. Correct Adam. Make up for his mistake here. He's forgotten somebody off the list. Begovic, Gray, Townsend, Rondon. Andy Lonergan. Another one.
Yeah.
Another
completely
one.
He's on the bench, Saturday.
Mate, indeed he was. And who knows, we know he may be used. So he obviously came through the doors in an emergency. But Connor, you know, Adam makes an interesting point there, though. Less than £2 million on 5 or 6 players, all with Premier League experience. And look, and we've rightly so far on this podcast said it's been an imperfect window and there's still gaps in the squad. But also the football club have done very well in that respect in a difficult situation with financial fair play issues, which are of their own making, of course, but to get those players with Premier League experience. Because if you went and said to the director of football at the start of summer, I want 5 players with Premier League experience, he'd probably just laugh at you, because of normally the transfer fees would be astronomical. But they have managed, you know, Rafa and the club and Marcel Brands have managed to go and get some good players for next to no money.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I said a few weeks ago on the podcast that for me, the pleasing thing for me was how we've kind of gone and got players who we know what they can bring to the table. I think, you know, Adam said there about, you know, that kind of the unpredictability of what we've seen from Everton. Now we've kind of got players who know what you're going to get from them. You know, we know what Rondon's going to bring. We know exactly what Townsend's going to bring. Gray's probably the one who's maybe a little bit unpredictable. But one thing you do know is he's got pace. He likes to drive the ball forwards, and he's shown already he likes to, you know, likes to get shots off when he's inside the box. So for me, the big thing was we've signed players who we know exactly what we're getting from. And that was the big thing for me, because far too many times over the last couple of years, you know, even when you look back, we signed a Wobi and people like that, you're scratching and think, well, what are they going to bring? What position are you going to play? You know, what's going to be the best asset moving forward? And for us to kind of not have that dilemma, not have that problem, and know when we sign a player, this is what we're getting, this is what we're going to bring to the table, for me, it was a massive turning point in terms of our recruitment. But no, I certainly think on the money side, it's been superb in that sense. I think you can't. I think as well, I mean, I'm speaking to Michael Baller in the week for his echo column, he made a really good point in the sense of, you know, Townsend and Gray. He said, you know, their reaping awards are being brought in so early. He said, you know, too many times in the past, Everton's recruitment's too late in the window, and they've eventually ended up getting players on the final day, and but then that player comes and he's not trained much because he's been planning to leave that club, and he's behind on fitness. He's got to adapt to his new surroundings, meet his new teammates, etc. And he was saying, you know, the fact that Everton were able to, you know, Rafa was able to identify them too soon as he come in as two targets, two players who are going to add exactly what he needs, and he was able to bring them in before the club boarded the plane to go to the US. He said that's a massive, massive help, because them had a start in the season. They've done a full pre-season. You know, the teammates, they're adapting to life where living in Liverpool. He said, and that makes a massive difference to a player than being ushered in at the 11th hour on deadline day and kind of you know, maybe living, having to live in a hotel for a couple of weeks and stuff, he said. So I think that, again, that's another positive in that, you know, Rafa come in, seen what we needed, identify players, and they were brought in straight away because, like we've all seen in the past, some of the way Everton have dragged their deal out for so long, it's been nothing short of ridiculous at times. You know, we've had 2 month sagas, haven't we, before in the past. You know, you think of Wilfred Tsar, where it kind of got to the point where it got to deadline day and it was really won't see what's going to happen. And the fact that we were just able to bring people in early doors, get them settled in and know exactly what we're getting from them is a massive benefit. We've got to bottle that now and take that forward and use that as the blueprint moving forward now for, you know, January possibly, or if not next summer, because that it clearly works and it clearly is something that we should do more of moving forward, because, you know, we're reaping the benefits already of two lads who come in and hit the ground running.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Okay, moving on to the players that the football club managed to move on. Long list, various things. Moise Keane, 2-year loan with an obligation for Juventus to turn up permanently, providing he meets various sporting achievements, as they say. Bernard moved on for, I think, less than £1 million. We got his wages off the bill. Walcott, Bolasie, Besic, their contracts expired. Virginia on loan, Broadhead on loan, and Kanku on loan. Thierry Small, of course. Not a player we wanted to lose, but he is to torn up his scholarship. Adam, are you happy with the business of outgoings that the club managed to do in a difficult market for different reasons, or do you think it could have been and should have been better?
Well, I think it could have been better because, you know, as Connor rightly mentioned before, you know, we've still got the likes of John Joe Kenny at the club. I don't think that, you know, there was particularly going to be a long-term future for him at the club. Someone like Fabian Delph as well, Rafa Benitez admitted at the start of the window, you know, in different circumstances, he probably would have been talking to Delph about his future. So maybe if Everton had been able to line up another midfielder, then somebody like Delph could have been on his way out of the club. So yeah, I do think it could have been better in different circumstances. But I think on the face of it, you've got to look at it as a positive step, and, you know, it's only going to get better next season as well, when more players do reach the end of their contracts as well. I think that's going to free up a little bit more wiggle room for Everton to potentially have a little bit of a busier summer next time around. But yeah, I mean, Bernard leaving, as I mentioned earlier, you know, to be able to get even just a little fee for him, I think was a positive. He was on, you know, quite large wages as well in terms of the actual output that he was given the club at the time. So I think that was a really good move for him. Well, for him personally and for the club as well, to be able to move him on. Moise Keane is just a really, really interesting one because I still don't think the idea of his transfer was a mistake at all, even though it quite clearly didn't work out. And I think it's a real shame that it didn't work out, because I think in other circumstances, perhaps if, you know, we hadn't been struggled so much under Marco Silva in his first few months, and Silva just didn't have time to give him on the pitch in the end, did he? He was very much scrabbling around, desperately trying to find points to keep his job, and that just didn't translate to giving a 19-year-old lad from Italy his first few minutes in the Premier League. So that was a real shame. And then obviously the COVID pandemic hit. That was a real shame as well, and that stunted his development a lot more. I think he had a really good time away with PSG last year, but that kind of just turned his head from that point, really, didn't it? So it is a bit of a shame to me that Moise Keane never really got the chance to prove himself at Everton, because I do think he's got a lot of quality and I do think he will be a good player elsewhere. But it does look like another good bit of business from Everton, really, because he was a player who, you know, let's be honest, from that Huddersfield game, you could kind of tell that he didn't really want to be playing for Everton, you know. So to be able to get, you know, a loan fee of, what is it, €3 million this year, €4 million next year, and then the obligation of €28 million, hopefully, in the future as well. I mean, that's some really good business for a striker who eventually just didn't want to be here. And it represents a tiny bit of a profit, maybe spread out over a few years, but a profit. So again, I've got to say that that's a good bit of business. And then, you know, kind of players who've left, Walcott leaving on a free, Bolasie leaving on a free, Bessett leaving on a free. Again, it's just wages that are coming back to Everton, aren't they? And I think they've, as we've mentioned previously, I think they've been utilised quite well to bring in the players that they have brought in. So it could have been better, certainly, if we'd have managed to find buyers for a few of the players that I think would potentially have been surplus to requirements at Goodison this year. But I think it's hopefully going to get even better next summer. So fingers crossed, things can work out that way.
Kind of the big one, of course, in terms of outgoings that didn't happen was James Rodriguez. Are you surprised that we're at the situation where the deadline, so the window shut and he was still an Everton player?
If you'd have asked me 3 weeks ago if I thought he'd go, I'd say yeah. But the last week or so, I think it became quite clear that he was more than likely going to be an Everton player. The Diaz deal was kind of one that they were trying to push for Everton, and they can get him over to Porto and get the lad Diaz in as a kind of a replacement. But no, I think the last week or so, I think it became quite clear that he was going to be staying an Everton player. I just don't think there's been any kind of, there's been no take up as they cross anyone from Europe to take a chance on him. I don't know whether it's his wages, maybe, you know, for the European market, just far too high. You look at, you know, clubs in Italy and places like that in Spain, it's they're struggling on the back of the COVID effect. So where that plays a role, but I think the big thing for me is that it's quite down that no one wants to take a chance on him, that no one has gambled. I thought maybe one or two a couple of weeks ago would have, you know, maybe an AC Milan would have took a chance on him, or Porto might look to bring back. But the fact that they haven't is quite telling, really. And I think, you know, for Everton's sake now, they've just got to try and get him back on the training pitch, get him fit, and maybe look to use him where possibly can, because there's no doubt he's an unbelievably gifted player. I mean, you know, there's no doubt he can do stuff that no one in that Everton team can do, and he can offer something that no one else can bring. So for me, he could be, you know, it could be a massive kind of benefit for us having him around the squad. But again, I think a lot depends on his attitudes and his mindset, because I think it became quite clear via his famous Twitch updates that he liked to give the public that he had his heart set on leaving Everton. He didn't really see his future at the club. So the fact he's, I know there's still chances he can go to Portugal, Russia and Turkey. I think there's still a couple of transfer windows he could possibly go to, but I think it looks like he's going to be an Everton player now until at least January. And I think the challenge now for Everton and Rafa as well, because it's going to be a test of Rafa's man management, because I've been told he's not on his plans, and I've been told him that he doesn't need him. You know, could potentially be going back and saying, well, actually, you know, get yourself fit and you might have a chance. Which I'd like to see, because like I say, I think he's got a lot of ability, and I think on his days he's a world-class talent. And Everton don't have any world-class talent, so he certainly could have his uses moving forward. And you know, the big thing now is the Goodison Park faithful might finally get to see him in full action, which is something that didn't look very likely ahead of the Southampton game a few weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It just definitely feels as though whether the crowd get to see James really depends on him and how he does in training. But Adam, I mean, look, maybe a bit of a broken record on this, because I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago, and ultimately the football club have to sign it off, so ultimately it's their responsibility. But, you know, I really feel this situation was created by one man and one man only, really, and that was Carlo Ancelotti, because James Rodriguez would not have been an Everton player if Carlo had not been at the club. Great that he could attract him. We had some great moments last season with James, but obviously we also had some issues with his injury and his fitness, and we're paying him a lot of money. And I just feel that, you know, it's Carlo's decision to just up sticks at the drop of a hat and ultimately leave a mess behind him has created an issue for everybody, player and club.
Well, I think just in general, like Carlo Ancelotti just up and sticks did just kind of leave a mess behind him, didn't it? But he just didn't really care. But in terms of James Rodriguez, I would have loved to have seen James's face when he realised that Carlo Ancelotti was on his way back to Madrid. He must have been thinking, how has this happened? What are you doing to me? But yeah, you know, it has kind of left him in a bit of a strange situation. And you know, obviously his comments on Twitch, as we've mentioned over the last few weeks have rubbed people up the wrong way a little bit. And you know, he's very clearly been unhappy with the fact that he's not going to be in the manager's plans, etc., etc. But yeah, I would say the window is past now. Like he's an Everton player, and I think he's a professional at the end of the day. And I think he maybe got unfairly treated, I think, a bit last season by some sections of, well, probably other fans, I would say, who thought that he, you know, didn't work hard for the team or anything like that. I think he works a lot harder than people realise, and especially in terms of a defensive sense. You do often see him tracking back and putting tackles in and stuff like that. And, you know, if Rafa Benitez can, I think in general, Rafa Benitez's training has been a lot more tough and a lot more, you know, structured and organised than Carlo Ancelotti's seemed to be. So if he can impose that onto James Rodriguez, maybe just get him, you know, like a little bit more match fit, then I think he becomes an absolutely amazing asset for Everton to have, at least up until January, if not like for the remainder of the campaign. Because I think especially at points last season when James was playing as a number 10, there were so many times that he must have been so frustrated in that team because he was picking up the ball in the right areas, going up towards the final third, but there was nobody running beyond him. There was nobody sort of breaking the lines. There was nothing for him to really, you know, thread a pass through to. Whereas, you know, like compare that to the Brighton game that we've just had, for example, away from home. And we had tons of that. Demarai Gray was breaking the line. Seamus Coleman was getting up from right back and doing it. Andros Townsend was getting down to the byline. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was getting around. Richarlison was running the channels. You know, imagine James Rodriguez being able to thread the passes through to some of those players in that sort of scenario. So if we can find some sort of formation that does benefit James Rodriguez in, you know, even if it's just for certain games of the season, you know, some of those home games that we struggled with last season, for example, where teams were just set up with two banks of four and we couldn't break them down. Perhaps James Rodriguez now with runners beyond them, that'll be the way that Everton could be able to break those sides down. Who knows? So I think he does become, you know, rather accidentally, he does become a major asset for Rafa Benitez to have. And I think Connor's absolutely right in what he says. It does become a little bit of a man management challenge for the manager now. They haven't said over the last few weeks that you're not in my plans. He maybe now does have to come up with a plan for James Rodriguez, because you know, he earns a lot of money playing for Everton. So I just don't think he's any use to anybody sat on the bench. Of course, he's going to want to work his way back into the Colombia squad as well. So I think that's maybe going to be a pretty big motivator for him over, well, certainly over the next few months at least. So I'm going to be really interested to see how it works out. And I think there are a number of possibilities, which mean it could really benefit Everton to have, well, of course, it's going to benefit Everton to have a player with the quality of James Rodriguez there, and you know, for the fans of Goodison to finally be able to cheer him on and show that appreciation. I think that's going to be, whenever that comes, that's going to be a nice moment for everybody, isn't it? So all in all, I think, you know, it might not have been the scenario that we were expecting, but I think it can be a positive one over the next few months.
Okay, excellent. Before we finish with our last sort of section today's pod, Connor, any of the players that we were interested in that ultimately didn't get signed? You know, there was obviously interest in Diaz, as you mentioned, Dwight McNeil, Longstaff at Newcastle, as Adam mentioned, Maitland-Niles, Dumfries. Any players that, you know, that we knew that Everton were interested in that they didn't sign, that you're disappointed that we didn't get?
I think McNeil would have been a good one to get in. I've been impressed with him. You know, I was impressed when he played against Everton last year at Goodison. I thought, he's an old-fashioned kind of winger, isn't he? And I think he would, certainly watching Everton last couple of weeks, he's just suited the way Rafa wants to play in terms of, you know, plenty of width, getting wide, getting balls into the box and having shots. I think he would have been, and I said, given his age as well, I think it would have been a shrewd bite, you know, to bring someone who's Premier League proven, you know, like we've alluded to already, bring Premier League proven and to bring someone in of that calibre and, you know, kind of maybe give him another platform. I think that would have been a good buy for us. And I think ultimately you've got to look at the fullbacks, haven't you? You know, Dumfries and even Ainsley Maitland-Niles. I think you would have just liked, not for maybe a certain, you know, in terms of, you know, I looked forward to watching them play, but just for that reassurance of moving forward, just having another right back in who is going to challenge Seamus Coleman, who's going to provide competition, who could potentially become the fullback in years to come, possibly. Just having that kind of reassurance, I think, as someone sat there, if something does happen to Coleman, which touch wood it hopefully doesn't, you know, when you've got someone there, or no one's going to be challenging him, or you know, bring him maybe doing freezing, you think, well, right, the next 5 years now, he's going to be our right back, and you know, we can kind of start laying proper foundation at the back and get a set of back four. So I think more than a player, I think just the position would have been nice, just that reassurance of to kind of just put your mind at ease. Because like I said earlier on the show, as much as it's a good been a good transfer window and everything seems to play as deep brought in and the impact they've had already, you just, it's that everything thing, isn't it? You just got that nagger feel in the back of your mind, a couple of injuries, a COVID crisis, and all of a sudden, you know, we're stretched and we're kind of struggling a little bit. So I think we've seen that last year as well, didn't we? When we lost key individuals last season, we lost our way. And I think that was a timely reminder that you do need a squad that people can come in and people and can have competition, because one or two out, you can lose your way, because we lost our way last year when we picked up injuries. So yeah, I think I would have liked McNeil to come in, but then I think just positionally, I think a right back would have reassured me going into the coming months of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, McNeil's an interesting one, isn't he? And we'll watch his space and see whether Everton revive any interest probably next summer. Adam, any player that we were linked with or interested in that didn't come through the door that you're disappointed at?
I think I'd probably go right back to the start of the summer when there were discussions over somebody like Max Ahrens. I think that's the one for me that I think, you know, really, really did get away. And I think it's, you know, rather strange that nobody eventually went for Max Ahrens. You know, it's really good business for Norwich that they were able to keep hold of him, really, because he is an absolute amazing asset to them. He's one of the most creative players in the Championship last season, wasn't he, from fullback? I mean, I just think he would have been a perfect sort of successor to Seamus Coleman, so that you can get up and down that flank, you know, get to the byline. He's really good defensively as well, which I don't think a lot of people pick up on. And I know it's easy to compare him to Godfrey because of where he's come from and, you know, the fact that he's a young defender coming from Norwich. But, you know, you could have seen how he would have, you know, progressed in a similar sort of way to Ben Godfrey if he had been signed. And then, you know, as Connor said as well, I think Dumfries is another one where it is a little bit disappointing that he didn't come in. I don't want to judge him solely on, you know, performances in the European Championships, but that's the only time that I've really had a good, solid look at him play. And I know he was playing as a wing back for the majority of that tournament, but it was really exciting to see how well he got forward, particularly because, I mean, obviously, in the past, Seamus Coleman has been very good at getting forwards and, you know, creating things in the final third. But over the last couple of seasons, we've seen that wane a little bit. He's not really getting to the byline as much. He's not really getting those crosses into the box with as much accuracy as he might have done over past seasons. So I think that attacking aspect of a fullback is probably something that we're missing down that right flank. And I do think Dumfries and, of course, Ahrens would have been able to provide that. So They're the main disappointments for me, but I do agree with Connor as well. You know, I think Dwight McNeil could have been a really good asset as well.
Okay, chaps, we will wrap it up there. Good stuff, good opinions and insight into what was an eventful window, an incomplete window, but some very good business done, but business still to be done, maybe in January, but certainly next summer. And let's see how Rafa Benitez can work with his squad. Made a very good start, of course. And hopefully that will continue. Excellent, chaps. Thank you very much for your company. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back at some point next week, obviously international break, but then obviously looking to preview the game with Burnley. And of course, Mr. McNeil will be coming to Goodison again. Hopefully he doesn't have another good game. But we'll see how that one pans out. We'll discuss that next week. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.